Welcome. This is Jay Thiemeyer for KBOO Community Radio. We are talking today about Portland Noir, the new collection of noir stories that was edited by Kevin Samsel and includes stories by Kimberly Warner Cohen, Bill Cameron, Monica Drake, and a number of others. I'd like to welcome all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Kevin, could you describe for us exactly what Akashic Publishers is doing with this noir series and how extensive it is and what you tried to do with Portland Noir as one edition?
Yeah, Akashic started this series in 2004. They started off with Brooklyn Noir because that's where they're based. And since then, they've published a number of these books. I mean, just looking at the list here, it looks like about 30 different books, different cities around the country, and outside of the country, they've expanded. There's even Dublin Noir, Havana Noir, Paris Noir, and so it's a pretty big series as far as what they do. They're a pretty small press. I think they probably only publish a dozen or so books a year. So this is a pretty big part of what they do. They asked me to put together the Portland Noir book last year, and I worked on it for about 8 months. One of the things I wanted to do, of course, is to keep it all Portland writers, to have a lot of Portland settings, and for people to be able to read it and you know, really be able to point out things that they notice or are familiar with. So I urged all the writers to, like, you know, don't use fake names for places or whatever. Like, use, you know, real names, you know, say Coffee People or, you know, Fred Meyer or whatever. And so, you know, there's all sorts of different, you know, every city has different names for different neighborhoods. And we tried to represent all the different parts of the town through the book.
How did you go about selecting writers, getting writers to contribute and getting the word out? How did you organize the book?
Well, I have a little bit of an advantage because I work at Powell's Books, and I've been an events person at Powell's since 1997, 1998. And I know a lot of local writers from working there and hosting events there. And I also know a lot of writers just from doing my own writing and stuff like that around town. I have a small press. I publish little books, too.
Give us the names of your press, for instance, and some of the things that you've written, and also when this reading coming up at Powell's is going to be. But tell us about your work and your press first.
My press is called Future Tense Books, and I started it in 1990. I moved to Portland in 92, and it's a very, very small press. It's mostly chapbooks is sort of what I specialize in. And it's mostly fiction, a few books that are sort of in the memoir kind of realm.
So it's not just mystery, for example.
Oh no, mystery is kind of it's sort of a foreign land to me, a foreign territory. So that was one of the fun things also about doing this book was most of the stuff that I read and most of the stuff that I publish and write. I've had a couple of books of stories published myself. It's, you know, probably what you would call more like literary fiction. So it was interesting to put this book together because I had to sort of go in a new territory I wasn't familiar with.
Could you give us the titles of what you've published that's available?
Some of my books?
Yeah.
The last book that I did was a collection of stories that came out last year called Creamy Bullets, and a book a couple of years before that called Beautiful Blemish.
Well, I appreciate that. So Akashic has been doing this for about 5 years, and it's literally almost global,
yeah.
Or it's Western Europe anyway. Well, with that background, I'd like to start going around. We have several of the contributors here, the folks that I've mentioned, and I would like to start with Kimberly Warner Cohen to please talk about the kind of writing that you do, and then if you would read some from your story, People Are Strange, in the collection here.
I mostly write about murder, which is why I think I was a good fit for the book. My last novel, Sex, Blood, and Rock and Roll, was about a female serial killer. Criminals, forensic psychology has always interested me, and the dichotomy between what's a normal person and what's deep inside us has always interested me too. And so I think noir lends itself to that as well.
Do you have publications that are available, say at Powell's or in the area that you would?
My novel is available at Powell's over in the Small Press Center. small parts section, rather.
Could you tell us about the story that you have in this collection? And People Are Strange is the title. And would you describe what you were thinking about when you produced it? And could you read some for us?
Sure. It was wintertime when I wrote it, and it was pretty gray out. And at the time, I lived up in the Sandy Boulevard area, which is where the story is about. And I got my inspiration from walking around and seeing all the interesting nondescript buildings down there.
Right. That is an interesting area, that's for sure. Would you please read from People Are Strange?
Sure. This is from the middle of the book. Sky was a lesser shade of gray the next morning, and Kara dressed in dirty jeans and a brown sweater, long past stretched out. The lack of sun was getting to her. Didn't know how people could handle it for months at a time. Usually didn't go outside during daylight, but it was nice to know that it was there. She weaved through the kids by the bus stop in front of the 7-Eleven, either dealing or really bored, and into the too brightly lit store to get her nicotine and corn syrup breakfast. Kara passed the motel, wandered further down until she reached the strip club, shaped like a huge whiskey jug. Pirate's Cove, emblazoned on a red and white backlit sign, and under that, wet panty party tonight. Love the anonymity of a cheap bar, but there were too many cars outside for this space, nowhere to hide. Retraced her steps and turned on a side street across from Ed's House of Gems, pine and concrete glorified shack fashioned to resemble a barn, complete with the Wild West white mural and dusty windows. Thought about going in, run her eyes over the fool's gold or maybe some onyx and hematite, but a sour middle-aged man in a flannel shirt stretched over a belly made huge from years of cheap beer was standing by the door, glaring at nothing. Instead turned left, down one of the residential side streets. Liked how nothing matched, everything shabby around the edges and thrown together, moss growing in between the sidewalk cracks and roof shingles. Even in the chill, front lawns were teeming with green. Kara zigzagged around corners and up avenues. Streets looked identical in their individuality, until she realized she was halfway to the airport, continued past houses progressively more run down, a mini-mart that was filthy, cement lots. Another strip club again. Couldn't miss the neon sign with letters burned out, so it read the landing strip. Nothing beyond that but hotels and car rentals. Much bigger than the other place, though no less decrepit. Parking lot half full. Perfect. Kara swung over the flimsy glass doors and into the dark, stopping on the carpeted ramp to adjust her eyes. Nose hit full force with the harsh odor of baby lotion, cheap powder, makeup, and desperation. Same as any other strip club she went into. Main illumination were strings of lights and plastic tubing that hung on the stage, bar, crisscrossed the walls. Popular in the 70s and hadn't been updated since. Black plastic tables, indiscriminately placed violet plush seats. Blue-collar guys and businessmen on layovers sat next to each other drinking buds in front of the main stage, laying dollar bills at the edges. Definitely not the A-team performing at this time of day. Lots of things jiggling where they shouldn't. Kara stood at the bar until a dim-looking guy in his early 40s waddled over. What can I get ya? Stella? We just ran out. Red Stripe? Don't carry it. Corona? Waiting on the delivery. Should be here later. What do you have? Session, Bud Light, Coors Light. Other choices nauseated her. Session.
Yeah, I love that. I'm from Norfolk, Virginia, which is a Navy town, and I recognize that scene very clearly. That was Kimberly Warner Cohen. Thank you. Reading from People Are Strange. Another contributor, and I'm working around the table. We're sitting at the table here sharing stories. And Bill Cameron, Coffee Black is the title of your story, and I love that. It's located over in near Southeast or Division, near the old Red and Black, and which figures
right,
in your story.
Right down the street from that. The whole reason that I came up with that story is I actually wrote my second book in that Starbucks where it's set. And the reason that I started writing in Starbucks is because I have no willpower and I needed to go somewhere where the Wi-Fi wasn't free. I couldn't write at home, couldn't write out in public. I had to find – so and Starbucks turned out to – you know, it was perfect. You had to pay for the Wi-Fi. So I never got – I actually got some work done. And over the course of about a year, of course, I got to see a lot of the broken windows in the shop. And I became friends with the fellows that worked there. And, you know, there was some tension, of course, between the Red and Black right up on the next street and Starbucks. And they made an effort to try to to bridge that gap a little bit, and never were quite able to. But so when it came time to come up with an idea for Portland Noir, I thought, well, I should write about this place where I write and see if I can capture a little bit of that tension. And
well, you definitely do. It's also you. It's almost like local history that you're capturing.
Oh, thank you. Well, and one of the things that was, I ended up having to do is the character that was the main character in my second book, I had to actually have to be the guy that investigated the crime. So I brought him, out as well. So it was a real fun opportunity to, to play with this place that turned out to be very significant for me personally. And, part of my neighborhood. I don't live in that area right now, but I lived there for about 10 years right up the street. And so it's, very comfortable environs to me. So.
I lived there for about 10 years, too, over actually on Powell and 21st, and the changes were incredible, including the loss of Red and Black.
Yeah, and, it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, but fortunately it's relocated.
Yes.
Could you tell us about some of your publications and where they're available and what some of your writing?
Yeah, I've got two books out right now. They're both mysteries set here in Portland, available, Powell's Murder by the Book down on Hawthorne carries them and, here and there. First one is called Lost Dog, set over mostly around the Irvington neighborhood. And then Chasing Smoke, the second one, is close in southeast Portland. I get around a little bit. I'm currently working on my third one, which is going to be set more around Mount Tabor. So kind of moving my way around the city as I go. Cool. And they're definitely dark crime fiction. Second one's kind of a fairly noir kind of police procedural. First one is
Chasing Smoke.
Chasing Smoke, yeah. Lost Dog is more psychological suspense, kind of cat and mouse story.
I liked what Kim was saying about noir being a good way to look deeper, probing people and seeing these internal tensions or history or whatever that emerges in the story. That's the appeal of noir to me, and it's obvious that it's been in all three stories. That's what would appeal to me.
Well, I think a lot of times people think of mystery as being very plot driven, and as a writer, I'm interested in character driven stuff. And I think that within the mystery realm, character driven tends to be more common. Whether it's kind of psychological suspense or, you get – and the definitions of noir, yes, 10 people, you'll get 10 different definitions. Mm-hmm. But, that kind of gritty, introspective, often self-defeating quality tends to be common, a common thread, no matter what your overall definition of noir may be.
Impending doom.
Impending doom, yes.
Major character.
Yes.
Well, what would you like to read for us?
Well, I can read from the start. So this is Coffee Black. 25 years a cop, 7 working homicide, and this is what I've come to. Staking out Starbucks in the middle of the night in the hope of catching a vandal in the act of bricking the windows. Welcome to retirement. I'm parked in the shadows outside the food mart at Seven Corners, a tangled confluence of streets at the southeast edge of Ladd's Addition. Starbucks is across Division, part of a corner development that includes a day spa, a pasta restaurant, and a cramped parking lot apparently designed in anticipation of the oil bust. 3 nights, and the most exciting thing I've seen so far is a half-naked couple humping in the cob outside the kitchen shop on the opposite corner. I snapped a few pics, but even with the shutter wide open, it's going to take someone with more Photoshop voodoo than me to make the shots internet ready. Just after midnight, as I'm thinking about taking a piss behind the dumpster next to my car, I catch sight of a figure approaching down 20th. He high steps across the parking lot, elbows flared as if he learned his ninja moves off Cartoon Network. Jeans, black hoodie pulled tight around his face, medium height, medium build, cigarette held behind his back, a smoldering taillight. About what I expected, some nitwit tweaked on vodka and Red Bull who thinks he's striking a blow against insatiate corporatism. I slip out of my car and rest the long lens on the roof, sight through the camera's LCD. The light isn't good, a silver jaundice mix of mercury vapor and sodium streetlights, sky glow, and the gleam from the Quickie Mart. It's adequate. I'm not shooting art photos. I just want to capture an identifiable face. As I snap the first pic, I hear the scrape of a shoe and turn as a broad dark shape swoops across the roof of my car. I duck, but not fast enough. Fabric nets my face and shoulders. Hands grab me from behind, shove me hard against the car. A sound wafts out of me, half shout, half gasp. I drop the camera and thrash, grab the cloth on my head, realize I've got the arm of a jacket. For an instant, I'm in a tug of war, unable to see my opponent. Then the sleeve starts to tear and someone hisses, "Just leave it, doinkus!" The hands release me and I windmill backward onto my butt. As feet slap pavement, fleeing, I hear the sharp, brittle crash of breaking glass. I shout, yank the jacket off my head. My assailants are gone, the camera with them. No sign of the ninja either, but across the street I see a fresh lattice of cracks in one of the Starbucks' oversized windows.
Mm, nice. I also, not to give it away, but there's some things that you're introduced early on that seem very minor or inconsequential that emerge during the story as being very critical, like Doinkus.
Yes.
Right. I appreciate your reading that.
Thank you.
The third contributor we have with us is Monica Drake, who I'd like to welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Could you talk about you've been doing a lot of writing recently and for quite a while, actually. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, I've been writing for a long time, pretty much since 1991, when I was Tom Spanbauer's first student in Portland, when he moved to Portland. I've written short stories for years and years, and they've come out in a lot of journals, like Three Penny Review, and more recently, I have an essay in the Northwest Review, and I just received word that I'll have something in The Sun soon, which I'm happy about. Yeah, I've written short stories that have come out in literary journals for years, and then a couple years ago, I had a novel come out called Clown Girl, and that was published by Hawthorne Press here in town, relatively small press, but it's done really well. It's now in the, fifth printing. Yeah, translated into Italian. It was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, they like clowns.
You have arrived.
Italy.
And you were mentioning trying to getting that together for a film? And
no, I wrote a screenplay. It's not based on the book. It's a separate project. That's what I've spent the last year learning how to write screenplays. And I actually just got back from a trip to Los Angeles where I met with production companies and an agent and just trying to stir things up. Nothing's a done deal yet, but I'm still working on it.
The cinematic quality of noir is really, to me, there's a visual quality and that depicts a psychological kind of confusion or questions and really arouses my curiosity when I'm reading this. I'm wondering what's going on with the person being talked about or the people being talked about, that dynamic. Monica, I would like for you to read, if you would.
I'd love to. Thank you. I'll just read from the beginning of my story. It's called Baby, I'm Here, and it starts... Rebar's first day out of the big loony bin on the hill, just checked into transitional housing, I agreed to meet him at the Marathon Taverna. I should have said no, bad plan, but I went along with it. Over the phone, he said, I need to get out, see people, get back in the swing. I said, the only people you'll see at the marathon are drunks. Maybe your dad if we stay late. He said, I need to see you, Vanessa. And I gave in. Before that, he'd wanted to meet up at my place. Problem was, my place was his place. He owned the house. If I let him in, he'd never leave. He'd pick through my things looking for his things, any sign of him and me together, like playing husband and wife or some other sad story. His was one of the last shacks set between warehouses in deep Northwest. Rebard said I could use it until he got out. Out of jail, out of detox, out of the mental motel that was part of his sentence. It sounded like a long enough list. I hadn't expected him back any time soon. He's not known for good behavior. I took a bus down 21st and walked along Burnside. Overhead it was a gray sky. My raincoat flapped against the wind like a dying bird, slapped my knee with each step. Traffic lined the street, thick as a parking lot. More cars jammed the McDonald's. Across the way, somebody'd built a high-rise condo. The whole town was turning into a city of glass pillars. A guy in a pickup held back at a green light. He let me cross 18th. When I got to the other side, I smiled and waved thanks, wiggled my fingers in the air. The man smiled, too. He was still looking my way when he stepped on the gas and T-boned an idling smart car wedged in the intersection. There was the crunch of metal, a broken headlight, something swimming pool blue that skidded over the macadam. I pretended not to notice, because the thing is, that man had been sweet. I didn't want him to feel bad about his driving problem. Inside the marathon, I found a table and peeled off my coat, put down my pocketbook. The tavern air was murky, thick with sweat, beer, and smoke, but it was warmer than outside. And it was dark, instant night in the middle of day. Scattered popcorn on the carpet was the glow of stars. I looked for the North Star, some guiding light in that mess, like an explorer let loose on a new world. Rebar, now sober, still crazy, and adjusting to antipsychotics, he was a new world, a new planet. I had no idea how to handle him. Taki, the Greek who ran the place, dropped his rag. He said, "Ah, Vanessa, my beauty, what can I do for you?" He wiped his hands on his pants. He always said my beauty. It didn't mean much, but I liked it, and liked him for it. I said, I'll have a beer and a Snappy Tom's if you got it. In that bar, beer meant Budweiser. There was nothing else. Taki said, you're alone? I said, not alone, with you. My hair was thick and hung heavy over one eye. I shook it out of the way, but it fell back again. One of these days, I'd get a real haircut.
Right, that was nice.
Can I just say one thing?
Quick, please.
I just wanted to say when I wrote that, when I shaped it up, to kind of consider the noir angle, but maybe move into it a little bit differently, I was just trying to cultivate a story from the point of view of the femme fatale. So she's kind of the trigger in the story. That was just a way to shift the angle a bit.
She sounds with the hair hanging down heavily. And
that line makes me laugh. I don't know if it does anyone else, but it's just that ridiculous haircut. Yeah.
Reminded me of Roger Rabbit for some reason. Cliché femme fatale.
Yeah.
I would like to ask Kevin to tell us about upcoming readings, because there are a number of them in the area where people can get a chance to hear more of this read and check out the book, get their own copy.
Yeah. If people want to see the list of readings, they can also go to the Akashic websites, which is akashicbooks.com.
I wish it's spelled that.
It's akashicbooks.com. And they have the list there. I can go over it real quick. There's a few of them. There's the June 5th one at Powell's, and that's on a Friday night, so that'll be sort of the big launch there. And on that night, I'll be joined by Jonathan Selwood, Luciana Lopez, and Chris A. Bolton. And Chris is interesting because he also works at Powell's, and his story in the book is set in Powell's. So
in Red Room.
And I thought that would be logical to have him read his story at Powell's. It's like a weird, you know, looking in the mirror, looking into the mirror thing. So that will be fun. And also at a lot of these events, too, a lot of the other contributors will probably be there in the audience. So I hope that people will come and, you know, get the book signed by several people, not just the readers. That will be followed a couple weeks later, June 18th, which is a Thursday night, at Looking Glass Books over in Selwood. And I'll be joined by Dan DeWeese, Floyd Skloot, Megan Cruz, and Ariel Gore. And then a couple of weeks after that, we'll be doing a more of a club kind of show on July 2nd, which is a Thursday night again. And that'll be at the Blue Monk. And there'll probably be some music at that show as well. I'm not sure who yet, but there'll be readings by Justin Hawking, Karen Carbo, Gigi Little, and Monica will be at that one as well. And I think at that one, we're sort of toying with the idea of maybe you know, having the readings early, and you know, it starts at 9, having the readings be done by like 10:30, and then show sort of like a late movie at the space too. So we're trying to figure out what kind of movie to show. I was thinking maybe Double Indemnity or
Roger Rabbit,
something like that. And then let's see, and then there's one on July 15th, which is a Wednesday, at Murder by the Book here in Portland. And that one will be teaming up with a couple of people from Seattle Noir, which actually just came out at the same time as Portland Noir. So be a big Northwest Noir party.
And I like that, the way you depict it as a battle of the noirs.
Yeah, sort of. Exactly. So Bill's going to be at that event with me, and we're gonna take down the Seattle noir people.
That's right.
Yeah. And then we're going to go up to Seattle, and we're doing an event in Seattle too, July 11th. And I'll be up there with Chris Bolton from Powell's.
And the reason I did that, that's
at Elliott Bay Bookstore.
Right.
And the reason I had Chris go up with me is because his story takes place at Powell's. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be funny to have someone read a Powell story at Elliott Bay Books.
Right. In their face. That sounds great. Well, the first reading you mentioned, June 5th, is at the downtown Powell's?
Yeah.
This has been Jay Thiemeyer talking with Kimberly Warner-Cohen and Bill Cameron and Monica Drake, along with Kevin Samsel, who edited the collection, which included these three writers, called Portland Noir. And I'd like to go around the table and very quickly tell me, Kimberly, Kim, what you're working on now. Is it a mystery? Is it a crime-oriented? Is it murder? and is it located in Portland?
It's not located in Portland. I'm a recent transplant here. I'm from New York. Mm-hmm. So it takes place in New York. It's a little noir themed, but it's mostly apocalyptic literature. I can't be much more specific than that.
That sounds good. I guess New York knows apocalypse after 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill, do you have something that you're working on that you're people can look forward to?
I'm just finishing up my third book, which is, as I mentioned, it's set mostly in Portland. It's about a young woman who's fleeing an abusive husband from Southern Oregon. She escapes to Portland, gets helped by a local skate punk, and ends up getting involved in a murder, and it all takes place mostly up on Mount Tabor.
Do social issues play a big role in what you try to write? Sounds like it.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to be too heavy-handed about it, but I certainly try to involve some kind of social issue. My first book was the effects of childhood sexual abuse and prostitution on people's lives. My second book was coping with mortality, cancer, terminal illness, and. So I guess this time I'm going tackling abuse and related issues. And I think that's often common in noir. There's some kind of social issue that seems to be at play on some level or another.
Monica, can you tell us what to look forward to?
Yeah, I'm working on a new novel. I'm about 100 pages into it. It's not noir or mystery. It's I guess you'd call it an edgy comedy. It's sort of hard to pin it down more than that. But the story that's coming out in the Sun in the near future is a section of it, actually. So.
And what does that have to do with, or can you give us some more detail? The story that will be coming out in the Sun magazine, because I know there are a lot of Sun fans out there.
Right. The story that's coming out in the Sun, I can tell you, is about a woman who is an academic, and she's got a new baby. And in the course of the story, she meets both Clifford, the big red dog, and Johnny Depp.
Keep her busy.
That's the cast.
Yeah. Well, this has been Jay Thiemeyer for KBOO, thanking my guests Kimberly Warner Cohen, Kevin Samsel, who is the editor of Portland Noir, Bill Cameron, and Monica Drake. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.